Well, Jesus is a master storyteller, isn't he? Sometimes it's easy to forget that it's a story, right? It's a parable. It's a teaching moment. Sometimes we get caught up and we might actually wonder, who is this Lazarus? And who is this rich guy? So let me begin by reminding you that this is a story. It's a teaching story. And Jesus invites us into this parable. And parables are meant to sort of captivate us in a way that we live in them and we look at the world through them, and it helps us see the world with a perspective. This is very important. It's because, you know, it's easy to read this and it's just another divide, right? He begins with these two main characters in the story. The first one we see is this rich man. He doesn't get the name that Lazarus, you know. Lazarus has the privilege of a name. That sort of reveals to us, it exposes one of Jesus' biases, that the rich are unnamed while the poor are honored with a name, Lazarus, and his name lives, right? But the first one, we see this rich man. He's dressed, he's adorned, he's got everything that we might wish for and admire. He feasts sumptuously, you know, and we feast sumptuously, so we can really identify with this guy. And here's a danger that we might have that Jesus, I think, with this parable calls us to examine. You know, which one of these people sort of represents God to us? Because I think in a lot of ways, we've gotten into trouble. We've made God the first character and not the second. God is distant. He's unsearchable, right? He's unknowable. He's untouchable. He's up in heaven somewhere. He's feasting sumptuously, even in this very moment. And we dare not say his name. Maybe that's why this rich person has no name. So see, I think the church has sort of worshipped a God that looks a lot like the rich man, right? He's distant. He's got lots of power and lots of wealth. He's got everything that we could dream of, but we dare not bother him, right? I'm not saying that we do that, but I think we've inherited centuries of theology that says that's who God is. On the other hand, you have this poor guy. He lives at the gates. He longs and he hungers for just a scrap from the table of the rich man, you know. And then we get this gruesome detail. I could live without the dog licking sores on his face or on his body. I could do without that kind of detail, right? But this is how real Jesus wants to keep it for us. And throughout Jesus' ministry, his time spent with the poor should tell us something about the nature of God, right? Not the first one, not the first character who shows up in this story, but the second character. So that's the first sort of instructional thing I think Jesus' parable has for us. And it might enable us to re-examine who we think God is and what the nature of God is. And then we get to the middle of the story, and I love this line. You can see this line in Scripture a lot. It shows up. It says, and besides all this, it's almost as if to say the storyteller saying, forget everything I've said so far. That's just kind of fluff. It's extra. It's, you know, it's storytelling. Besides all this, the sentence that follows is the part you need to listen to, right? As the storyteller, I'm going to indicate to you, I'm going to hold up a big neon sign that says, here's the point of the story. I'm going to introduce it with a line that says, besides all this, a great chasm has been fixed between you and me. It's like that's, as a storyteller, Jesus can't make it any more obvious for us. Besides all this, forget all that, a great chasm has been fixed. What does that mean? I mean, it's fixed. It's permanent. You know, the Bible uses that kind of language about God creating the world. He fixed it on this pedestal. He set the heavens there, and he put the earth here, and he stirred up the waters over here, and it's all fixed. This is unmovable, unchangeable. This is the way it is. And you know what? The way it is ain't right for us. A great chasm has been fixed. And some people might want to pass back and forth, and that's not the point. And again, the point of the story is not about heaven and hell. Let's not make it about heaven and hell. Let's just understand that that's the storytelling paradigm that Jesus is using. Let's make sure the story is about us, right? It's about the great chasm that has been fixed in our politics, in our religions, in our language, in our race wars, in our gender wars. Let's make sure this story touches us where it hurts. Just turn the news on, and even you don't even need the news. You can just turn on the commercial in between the news, right? That's where the divide strikes the most, right? And I approved this message. The chasm has been fixed. And then we get this interesting interaction here. The rich man is suffering. He's in torment. And he says to Abraham, where he looks across the chasm, he looks across the great divide, and he sees the poor man. He didn't know this guy existed before. But now all of a sudden, he wants to put the guy to work, right? This is his worldview. If there are poor people out there, they're there to serve me, right? So even in the afterlife and the great chasm that has been fixed, you know, why don't you send Lazarus, you know, make him useful to me. Let him dip his finger in water and let me just drink, you know, and I'm like, yeah. No, that's not how it's going to work. That doesn't fix the divide that is between us, does it? That just lets you feed into your worldview and perpetuates that Lazarus is here to somehow serve you and make your life better. Well, if you're not going to do that, at least let him go and warm my brothers, right? Because I have five brothers. At five, how many brothers is it? Is it five? Yeah, thank you. And here's another really telling piece that brings me back to our children's sermon time and Aaron's response that we should do justice and love kindness and walk humbly with our God. What does Abraham say to him? You have Moses and the prophets. Why do you need me? I've already come down many times. I've intervened as much as I need to, and I'm going to. And what I did is I gave you Moses. What does that mean? What did Moses give us? Yeah, the law. I've given you a way of life. I spelled it out on these tablets for you. It's in plain black and white. This is how you need. So you have what Moses gave you. I could just rattle off some things. What did Moses give us? He gave us honesty, you know, tell the truth. He gave us integrity, you know, do what you say you're going to do. Fidelity. He gave us fidelity and trustworthiness, right? He gave us a way to live with our neighbors that's not spiteful or envious or seated with jealousy, but just to simply, you know, be people of integrity. Don't kill each other. Try not to kill each other. I think there was an 11th commandment that said, don't be a jerk. Right? Don't be a jerk. So you already have Moses. And then, okay, that wasn't enough. So then I gave you the prophets. And my word, my sort of discerning sort of wisdom about the way the world should be, I just gave you some addendums to the law, right? It wasn't enough that I could spell it out clearly in 10 commandments or 667 commandments on the commandments. I thought I'd give you some artistic renderings of that. So the prophets were very poetic, and they say these wonderful things like, let justice roll down like an ever-flowing stream. Love the Lord your God with all your heart, mind, soul, and strength. You know, walk humbly with your God. And what I hear in that story, and Abraham's response to the rich man, is that don't ask for some heavenly superpower to intercede on your behalf. Does that seem fair? Abraham's like, no, I'm not going to be your errand boy, and I'm not going to send Lazarus to be your errand boy. We've already taken care of all of that. We have set it before you, the ways of life and death. Now walk in the way of life. Can it be any simpler than that? Is that the answer to the great chasm that divides? Just do what you've already been told? I don't know. It seems more complicated than that. Was there a system that created this chasm between the rich and the poor in this story? Is there what we would call systemic racism? Have you guys heard that word this week? This month? This year? Are there inherent ways that we have ordered our culture and our society that have just accentuated the things that divide us along lines of race and gender and sexuality and economics? Yeah, I think there are. I think it's bigger than us. And I think in our desperation and our cynicism, sometimes we think the only hope is to sort of call down fire from heaven. Let's look for the miraculous superpower of heaven to intervene on our behalf. Let God work it out. But Jesus' teaching here says to us once again that I've already given you everything you need. You know, this great chasm that separates us, that's been a dividing and a divisive point in all of our lives, it can be mended. It can be healed. And the idea is not to pass over it, but maybe it is to walk through it. Or maybe it's about building bridges, right? I had this image of that walk across the Selma Bridge. Some of us saw that movie last year, right? That bloody Sunday in March of 1965, when all those civil rights demonstrators walked across the Edmund Pettus Bridge in Selma, Alabama. Is that what we're called to do? To walk humbly with our God and with our neighbors and with the ones that don't look like us or don't talk like us? Who don't necessarily share all of our values. Is that what we're called to do, is to walk the bridge? Well, I think we are, but more than that, that bridge hasn't even been built yet, right? The bridge that crosses the great chasm that separates us today hasn't even been built yet. So we need to build that bridge. And I think the way we build that bridge is to walk humbly, to do justice, to love kindness, right? And then, you know, that humble walk with God, that's a reminder, too, that God doesn't leave us alone. This idea that I'm saying, you know, don't expect God to fix it all for you, I'm just saying it's a switch in how we think about God. God will walk humbly with us. God will be part of the bridge building. If we just take one step, God takes two steps, right? I actually believe that to be true. That if we just extend a little bit of effort, then God's effort just doubles and multiplies every little bit that we do. So I think we are called to do that. It's overwhelming to me, the divides in this country. And I know it is to you because I hear you guys all the time. And it's troubling and it's disturbing. And sometimes I think it's hopeless. But I know that we have been given Moses and the prophets. We've even been given, you know, the last line in there. We've even been given a guy who raised from the dead. What are we going to do with those things? Let's do the one thing we can. We can't solve everything, right? But we can do the next right thing. And we can walk humbly and do justice and love kindness. Thanks be to God.